TCM and the traditional Chinese medicine community here in Vancouver. In the course of these interviews, I examine the local culture and practice of traditional Chinese medicine, as well as inquire into its philosophy and difference from Western medicinal practices. This series is produced for CJSF 90.1 FM's Making Time for Radio project. Today's interview is with Dr. Les Moncrief, a healthcare professional who has worked for 27 years in a detox center and who is also one of the first practitioners of acupuncture here in Vancouver. Les is a local pioneer of acupuncture, and his keen efforts led to acupuncture and other alternative therapies being employed as an adjunct to mainstream medicinal practices in detox clinics. We first talk about his initial encounter with acupuncture and other alternative therapies in Portland, and his efforts to bring such creative approaches to addiction back to Vancouver. Afterwards, Les discusses how he first got into medicine and why he prefers alternative therapies over pharmaceutical medicine. Following, we talk about the early days of acupuncture in Vancouver, public perception, and some significant figures working to validate and promote acupuncture back in those pre-legalization days. Following that, Les speaks on how his position inside the health organization allowed him to promote these complementary therapies. We end the interview discussing the ongoing difficulty of convincing Western doctors to investigate the efficacy of Chinese medicine. My name is Chris Spangerberg, and you are currently listening to an interview between me and Les Moncrief here on CJSF 90.1 FM. So Les, tell me a little about yourself and your history.
In the early years of my experience working in the field of addictions, it was a pretty harsh environment, and I worked in a detox setting, and so there was a lot of physical withdrawal, mental, emotional withdrawal stress. Other than some medications, it really wasn't very effective, and there was a whole lot of suffering. It was a considerable stressful environment for the clients as well as the staff. And, you know, I'd heard a little bit about lasers for people quitting smoking. And so I started working with a couple of physiotherapists who were teaching me about the lasers. And it was during that period of time when I heard about they were doing acupuncture, very similar to the way they use lasers. It was auricular acupuncture down in Portland, Oregon. So a friend of mine, Ian Lundquist, and myself, we drove down to Portland to a couple clinics down there, Hooper Detox Center and Portland Acupuncture Clinic. And based on my experience working with addictions in a detox center, this was a totally different experience, and I was very, very impressed. Clients came in early in the morning. They would have a little breakfast right off the street, actually. This is in a detox center, and they would get group acupuncture, and it was pretty much totally auricular acupuncture. And what I saw was, you know, these are hardcore drug addicts and alcoholics right off the street, and in a very short order, they experienced a great deal of tranquility and quiet, and they appeared to be very comfortable. And it was like, literally, like walking into a Buddhist monastery. It was that peaceful. And this is very unlike the experience I was used to working in. Later that day, I actually experienced a treatment myself, and that treatment changed my life. At that time, and perhaps to some degree still, I was quite an anxious, neurotic individual, and that one simple treatment was profoundly powerful, making me feel very relaxed and comfortable, and essentially grounded and connected, like almost like being in a Buddhist monastery after some considerable time meditating, perhaps. But so that was my experience, and then after what I saw, the effects on the clients, with all kinds of addictions, from heroin to crack to Valium to alcohol, it was I was sold on it. I was very impressed. I looted that place for all the documentation and literature that I could find, and came back to Canada and to the Vancouver Detox Center, and I was so pumped and excited. I thought that perhaps they might jump on this incredible information. Not only the use of acupuncture, but many of the other strategies they are using, the housing for addicts as being critical for people in recovery, and just how the city itself was dealing with street population, and it just seemed to be far superior than what we were doing in Vancouver. But the reception I got was kind of... This was in August of 1989, and it took a number of years and a whole lot of presentations and talking it up and so on before people started perhaps get a little bit curious. And ultimately, many of the directors, Many of the managers, the detox managers and outpatient clinic managers, even Vancouver City Police delegation and Vancouver Sun reporters, they began making pilgrimages down to Oregon, Portland, Oregon, specifically to see really what was going on there. And this was the beginning of many, many caravans of Vancouver people going down to Portland, Oregon to assess and evaluate their approach, very creative approaches to addiction and homeless people. That was basically my experience. And based on that, working from the inside, I wasn't very satisfied with my experience up till that time. And gradually, based on what I saw in Portland, I started myself to integrate some of those practices in a very gentle and a slow, methodical manner into our detox setting. And clients seemed to be most receptive. And typically, it made them much more relaxed and comfortable. Things like although acupuncture wasn't permitted at that time, we would use seed therapy, we would use detox herbal teas, we would use Bach flower remedies. And I was always amazed at how receptive and effective these treatments were for these clients.
So how did you first become a healthcare professional? What inspired you to first enter the medical profession?
Well, leaving high school, I began learning industrial first aid and actually driving ambulance up in the northern BC and in the oil fields and also in the lumber mills and in construction and even in the mining sector for a period of time. So after a period of time, I felt it would be useful for me to, rather than working as an individual and having all that responsibility of dealing with emergency situations, I would feel that it would be good to learn a little bit more of the teamwork. And so I took some nursing. I did 2 or 3 years as a practical nurse at Vancouver General and Mount St. Joseph's and a couple of other hospitals, but I didn't find it very satisfying. And ultimately, back in 1984, I was hired by a detox center, Pender Detox at the time, and ultimately working at Vancouver Detox. And coming from the field of addiction myself, my family were quite affected by addictions. My father was an alcoholic, so I felt quite an affinity for this population, and it was quite therapeutic for myself as well.
In your practice, you employed a wide variety of complementary and alternative therapies. Why do you employ so many alternative medicinal practices in tandem with mainstream Western medicine?
Well, the mainstream medicine primarily relies on pharmaceuticals, and the side effects of the pharmaceuticals, for example, the methadone or the Percocets or some of the synthetic opiates, are addiction in themselves. And even things like Valium and Ativan. I mean, it didn't take long working in the detox center to know the effects of the side effects or the withdrawal effects from these drugs, and it was actually extremely painful and difficult. So dealing with withdrawal from drugs with more drugs didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, you'd end up dependent on another drug, or, the side effects were extreme, more extreme discomfort. Although it was, coming off heroin with the use of a methadone cut, perhaps, was very effective and remains a very effective and legitimate way to withdraw from opiates, street drugs. I just found that being that the clients were receptive to some alternative therapies, or what perhaps better called complementary therapies, we started in a very slow way utilizing some of the techniques that I'd learned in Portland, Oregon. Seed therapy, Bach flower remedies, even drinking more water and herbal teas and things like this seemed to have a profound effect. And ultimately, it wasn't until 1996, the NDP government with Glenn Clark, they legalized acupuncture. And shortly thereafter, close to around 2000, Vancouver Coastal Health, rather, they did a pilot study on the effect, on the efficacy of acupuncture for addictions. And several projects were chosen on the downtown east side, and ultimately the results were very, very positive. And based on those successful projects, the funding continued. And so a number of projects were initiated and maintained over the years, till this day, actually.
So where did you study these complementary medicines?
I made a number of trips, of course, down to Portland and learning there. Mentored with a couple of the Chinese medicine doctors at that site. But actually, my experience and my skills were acquired more from an apprenticeship style with a local Chinese acupuncturist. And ultimately, I was sent to China to learn the practical end of, you know, the needle. And this turned out to be very, very fascinating. The first time I was in China studying in a hospital, it was 4 months. And for the next 12 years annually, I conducted Chinese medicine tours to China. And this became almost like a business, but it was just a way for me to connect with various hospitals and various teachers and ultimately get me back in that environment where I could learn more myself. Many of the tours that I took, there was one tour every spring usually that we went back to China for anywhere from a month or even longer. Some students would stay for 2 or 3 months. A number of doctors would apply to go on these tours. I took anywhere from 6 to maybe about 15 or 16, 17 individuals. And we would set up in a hospital setting, and they would get experience not only receiving treatment, but learn about Qigong or massage or herbs or acupuncture, depending on what their particular interests were. I'd introduce them to the clinics and to the physicians and directors and nurses and so on.
What benefits do you feel Chinese medicine holds in your practice?
Well, the real benefits are being successful or not. Talk therapy is very limited in what, as far as that will go with a client, and to be able to have the skills or ability to kind of get the attention of a client and help them relax and deal with the anxiety, the craving, the anger, the fears, agitation, help them sleep better, helps with depression. Acupuncture is absolutely almost magical in what it can do for a client in stress. And not only, you know, again, it, with all the various pharmaceuticals, whether it be coming off methadone or Valium or alcohol, cocaine, crack, whatever, it seems to have an overall effect in every one of those substances. So to be able to see the results of, you know, the effects of acupuncture or the herbal tea even, or simply music. Nowadays, it's not just acupuncture. You'll start off, the whole day will be a number of various complementary therapies. It could be Aboriginal spiritual healing techniques, smudging or talking circle. Could be yoga, meditation and mindfulness. Sometimes they'll have massage therapists coming in to treat the clients and many others. Healing touch, and you can have homeopathic practitioners come in to. I also work at on-site downtown in Hastings, where they have the injection site as well as a detox center. So they have all these different things, art therapy. Even in Vancouver Detox, they were teaching Tai Chi and Qigong for a period of time. I don't know if they still are doing that. So acupuncture probably was one of the first complementary therapies that were utilized based on the experience that many of the managers and others had down in Portland, what they saw to be successful.
Experience working in addiction services and a detox center.
Well, I've worked actually now for 30 years in the field with Coastal Health Authority, and 27 of the years was in a detox center. And fortunately, the transformation of the way we treat the clients has you know, changed very positively over the years. In the early years, it was, I have to say, it was kind of harsh and brutal. We didn't treat have a whole lot of respect for the clients, And sometimes when they wouldn't behave the way we expected them to behave, it was out the door you go. And but with time and the integration of more complementary therapies, I could clearly see a more gentler approach being taken with the clients. Clients seemed to be able to be more relaxed and comfortable in that very stressful and difficult setting. So as we started to incorporate you know, for example, the herbal teas, the acupuncture, seed therapy, and many of the other complementary therapies like yoga and mindfulness and meditation and many others. You know, typically in treatment centers and outpatient clinics and detox centers nowadays, you'll find a whole array of different alternative complementary therapies. And that's how the clients spend their day learning these techniques and experiencing the benefits, as opposed to just shake, rattle, and roll, which was the old way.
So how exactly did you integrate complementary and alternative therapies as an adjunct to the mainstream practice in the detox center?
Well, this actually became a bit of a problem based on after the legalization in 96. We were intent on integrating a variety of complementary therapies, and ultimately in 2001, the Vancouver Regional Health Board set up a task group to draft policy on complementary and alternative therapies, because what they were finding, there was a whole lot of them being used, but there wasn't any real regulation or anybody saying who could do it and how they could do it or any that kind of thing. So a task group was put together, and I happened to be on that task group, and after 6 months of working with this group, they came down with certain policies and procedures for the integration of CAM therapies. And that would be anything from Aboriginal spiritual healing, acupuncture, yoga, meditation, naturopathic consultation, healing touch, other things like even hypnotherapy was considered and seemed to be acceptable. So a wide variety of things were incorporated into the daily routine for the clients.
So were there any regulations surrounding your complementary practice of acupuncture? How do you overcome them?
Well, of course, the regulation, shortly after it was legalized, the College of Acupuncture, or College of Traditional Chinese Medicine Acupuncture Practitioners was established, and of course, set the standards. And of course, anybody working for the government in that setting had to be a licensed or a registered practitioner with specific training in the field of addictions. I was early in my experience of becoming licensed. I became a NADA trainer, a National Acupuncture Detox Association trainer. And so I spent a number of years training many, many people in basically acupuncture for addiction treatment, teaching them about addictions as well as the protocols used for acupuncture.
You were one of the first practitioners of acupuncture in Vancouver. Can you tell me about how the government and local people viewed TCM and acupuncture before it was legalized?
Well, I have to say that it was akin to voodoo, because they didn't have a great deal of understanding or about it, how it worked, and there was a lot of resistance, and it wasn't very welcome, put it that way. And it was only over a lot of time, a lot of consultation, looking at a lot of research. In fact, Dr. Louise Demarest and Nancy Poole were very instrumental in doing, under the authority of Dr. Wynot, who was a very influential doctor at the time in the downtown east side, did some research and demonstrated the efficacy of acupuncture. And that was the basis for acceptance within the Coastal Health Authority. And once it was accepted in the Vancouver Coastal Health Authority, it was ultimately showing up on Vancouver Island and the detox centers there and the Fraser Health Authority, as well as different authorities throughout British Columbia and even Alberta and back east.
So when acupuncture first got legalized, it was first utilized primarily in the detox centers, not as private clinics?
Initially, it was the detox centers, and I think there was probably a couple outpatient clinics on the downtown east side so that people could just come off the streets, get a treatment, and then go back out. Yeah.
So who else was involved or a practitioner of acupuncture before legalization?
Well, I have to give a gentleman by the name of Grant Smith. He did jail time back in the 70s as a result of practicing acupuncture without a license, or, you know, not as being an unacceptable way to treat people. So he was one of the early pioneers, probably. I just happened to be in a good position in those years because I was working within the system, and I think that was probably a critical factor in, as that I had access to the right people, the managers and directors and doctors and so on. And when I'm excited about something, I like to talk a lot about it. And so they got that earful and ultimately got curious enough to go down to Portland and other sites in the States. And just, you know, Seattle, for example, has a methadone program which incorporates acupuncture as well. So There was many, many people that headed down there to learn more about this really exciting approach to addiction treatment.
You helped to legalize acupuncture as a therapy in Vancouver. Can you talk about the process of legalization and the difficulties you encountered?
Well, there was initially quite a, you know, it was just ignoring some of the research. I had a stack of research probably a foot high, and nobody would even consider looking at it, which was really, I mean, this was valid and legitimate research, but they just didn't have the interest in the early years of examining it. They didn't believe it, actually. Even recently, I had an experience with I was doing a treatment on a client with tremors, essential tremors. This young, middle-aged man had a tremor all his life, and I used a little tongue-style acupuncture doing scalp technique, and his tremors stopped. And I saw him several days later, and they hadn't returned. This is one treatment. And I was pretty impressed, and so I contacted a local doctor who was very much involved in Parkinson's and essential tremors, and I sent him a bit of correspondence, and he just refused to acknowledge. He said, "I just don't believe it." And with no interest in pursuing whether, you know, there was any results, or even, you know, I wanted to see a trial and just demonstrate what I could do with a, you know, I've since done it on a number of people and had similar results. And so for many physicians and others, they do have an attitude that the Western medical is probably the only way, but others are becoming more and more receptive. And ultimately what's happening is many of the current therapies like physiotherapy and chiropractors and physicians and others, they are taking some level of training and starting to utilize acupuncture in their practice. The only problem there is that their training is insufficient as far as, you know, our college is concerned.
And that was an interview with Dr. Les Moncrieff, a TCM practitioner and healthcare professional who has worked for 27 years with alternative therapies in the detox setting. In the interview, we talked about Les's experience using acupuncture and other complementary therapies in a detox clinic, his efforts to promote such practices, and some significant figures in the TCM community before acupuncture was legalized.
And thanks to Chris Spangenberg and Dr. Les Moncrieff for that very interesting interview. So, Steve.
Yes?
What are your plans for the rest of the day?
Well, I have a job, so I got to go to work. For better or for worse. I don't know if my boss is listening, so I'm not going to say worse. It's actually, I actually like the job a lot.
That's good.
But it's just such a beautiful day, sunny day. I'm thinking of getting one of these like mini e-bikes from Costco. It's like $400. And just zoom around on the bike lanes. And
I've definitely thought of getting one of those. I mean, I have a regular bicycle, of course, and I do like riding around on it. But Vancouver can be really hilly sometimes. So, you know, having that little bit of an assist sometimes would be good.
And I think it's kind of thing where both parties benefit, right? Casual riders who wouldn't be able to do the hill climbs, they get to use the bike lanes, and suddenly the bike lanes start to be very useful for normal people. And sort of more kind of pro bikers are, you know, getting more bike lanes out of that process. So I think everyone's happy. Everyone's benefiting from that.
Definitely would be a good way to spend the day.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go with some music here. This is Debbie Friday from an album that's actually really getting a ton of attention across the land. It's been number one on the Earshot Campus Community Radio charts for a couple weeks now. Really shot to the top, even though it's been up for a little while. People seem to like it. This is a track called I Got You.
I got it. Debbie Heat. You know where I stay. Let mama give you what you need.
Debbie Friday and I got it from her album or their album. Good luck. Out now and available on all your popular platforms. All right, well, just about at the end of the program today. You've been listening to Speak Up, and thank you for joining me, Stephen.
A pleasure.
My name is Magnus Tiewold, and along with Stephen Fenn here, we've been your hosts for Speak Up for this hour. We'll be back next Tuesday in this time slot with more interesting content and interviews, music, and other fun stuff.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Stick around, though. Keep listening to CGSF. We have Democracy Now! Coming up in about a minute and a half, and up at noon... We have Katie Wilkes' show. I forget what it's called off the top of my head, but it's awesome new music produced by Katie. And then Paria's program at 1 p.m. So lots of great stuff coming up here on CGSF today. So stick around for that. And let's go with a quick message here, and then we'll be back to say our goodbyes.
The National Greening Program, run by Tree Canada, is dedicated to planting seedling trees across Canada in BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They prioritize planting on Indigenous and public lands and planting areas of natural and human-caused disturbance. The trees they plant help filter the air and water and sequester carbon, among other positive impacts. To learn more or get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
All right. This is the end of the show. Thank you for tuning in today. On today's program, we heard from Dr. Angie Brooks Wilson, the Dean of Science, talking about working against gender-based discrimination and violence in the STEM fields. She is the recently appointed Dean of Science here at SFU. We also talked to Dr. Les Moncrief of Traditional Chinese Medicine. Thanks for tuning in today.
Hi, I'm